Before we take a look at our readings this morning, there is news to pass on, and that is the Most Reverend Michael Pierce, who served as primate of the Anglican Church of Canada, and whom many of you might have heard of. He served as primate from 1986 to 2004, died peacefully earlier this week, just 4 days short of his 89th birthday. I spoke with a friend of mine, the Reverend Canon Catherine Askew, who's also a Lieutenant Colonel in the Royal Canadian Air Force, and who is also an Indigenous person. And she had this to say. She said, "Michael was primate when I began my first full-time ministry job for the General Synod as Indigenous Justice Coordinator. He was wise, humble, and had a listening spirit. He listened as Indigenous people revealed their trauma of the residential schools. He led the church to a place of humility and hope. He was an inspiration." And so we turn to our readings for today. It's always interesting to hear about the olden days, such as those described in our first reading today about Jacob and his wife, or wives. What a story. It almost deserves a PG-13 rating. But in addition to our Western 21st century ears, this entire story is jarring. Especially disconcerting are the ideas of women being treated as property, being treated as pawns in some grander economic strategy. So to those features of the story require us to discard it entirely as anachronistic, that is, out of our time and place, and therefore meaningless to us. It does feel that there's a bigger lesson there, though, and we'll take a bit of a look at that, especially when we consider the broader implications of this story. In last week's reading about Jacob, we heard about him stealing the birthright from his older brother Esau by tricking his father, Isaac. He tricked his way into becoming the new holder of the covenant first established between God and Abraham, the covenant of land and descendants and blessing. And now Jacob has been sent to find a new wife, or to find a wife. And Laban, his uncle, tells Jacob that he must work for him for 7 years before he can marry his younger daughter, Rachel. The 7 years pass, a wedding is held. Laban switches out Rachel at the critical moment, which we won't get into this morning, and swaps in Leah, his other daughter, his older daughter. Discussions are held the next morning, and Laban tells Jacob that he can still marry Rachel if he works for him for another 7 years. If ever there was a case of bait and switch, this must be it. But of course, Jacob's actions are questionable too. How did he not recognize that it wasn't Rachel who came to him? Was he drunk? Was his wedding night? Did he have other motives? And so the trickster Jacob has been tricked himself under shady circumstances all around, and he goes ahead with the plan for a second set of 7 years. What a family, what a family. I think if anything, we must admire Jacob's steadfastness in pursuing his goal. But did anything like that ever happen to you? So what eventually happens to Jacob? God surely can't be amused by all of these shenanigans, can he? Does Jacob lose the covenant? Does it pass to another family? I'll leave that as a cliffhanger. Moving to our gospel reading I must say that for fans of Jesus' parables, it doesn't get any better than today's gospel reading. Jesus tells five parables about the nature of the kingdom of God. We have the story of the mustard seed, a tiny seed, only a couple of millimeters in circumference at the biggest. It grows to become a tall shrub, offering shelter to everyone. A little seed from God grows into something big. We have the yeast that's secretly mixed into flour that eventually becomes bread to feed the people. We have the treasure buried in the field where someone sells everything they have so they can buy the field and claim that treasure. And a similar sort of parable to that one. The pearl that is of such great value that a merchant sells everything they have to obtain the pearl. Those first four parables are all quite straightforward. Many people have considered each of them, and each has launched a million sermons. But do you notice something strange about them? Each has an unexpected twist, at least according to conventional thought. Whoever thinks of a shrub as providing shelter? A mustard tree only grows to be about 2 meters in height, and it's not really a tree. And who would think of hiding yeast in flour? Sure, these days you can buy self-rising flour, but yeast hidden in flour? And who sells everything to acquire one thing? Sounds a bit like betting your house on the flip of a coin. And then there's the fifth parable, which makes us a little uncomfortable. It's a parable of exclusion. Jesus gives us an example of what is omitted from the kingdom of God. And we as 21st century Christians protest that I thought Jesus was all about inclusion, not exclusion. But I wonder if for that one, Jesus is talking about the sorts of behaviors or activities or mindsets that are kept out of the kingdom of heaven. And there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth because we want to hold on to some of those things that we hold dear to us, even though they're contrary to what should be in the kingdom of heaven. We might want to retain the old ways of doing things. We might want to retain our ways of treating people. We might want to retain our old ways of greed. We might want to retain the ways of treating Aboriginal people that we've done in the past as a church. All these things that are depicted in these parables are a surprise to us. They all show new ways to act, new aspects of the kingdom. They show new ways of bringing in the kingdom of heaven. They're ways that surprise us, because they go against popular or conventional wisdom. Some of us of a certain age might remember this song from Sunday school or youth group. I'm not going to sing it to you, I'll just say it. It goes like this. Well, surprise, surprise, God is a surprise. Right before your eyes, it's baffling to the wise. Surprise. Surprise, God is a surprise. Open up your eyes and see. In those parables, God is calling us to go all in on our movement towards the kingdom. It's not the time for half measures. We have to do surprising things. It's not the time to do the same old stuff, to play it safe. But some might protest, I don't have a spotless life. I don't have a clean life. How am I going to make it into the kingdom of heaven? Well, for that, we have a bit of inspiration from the story of Jacob. Heading back to that. There are several huge surprises there. Despite Jacob's trickery against his father Isaac, despite Laban's bait and switch against his nephew Jacob, and Jacob's interesting behavior on his wedding night, and even later. God doesn't give up on Jacob and his pledge to that entire family. God doesn't back away from the covenant. I'll bring that cliffhanger to a close here. Jacob eventually goes on to father 12 sons, each of whom becomes the head of their own respective tribe of Israel, God's chosen people. And all that is despite huge family dysfunction in the past, some of which we just heard about. And despite conflict, despite trickery, despite deceit, Jacob will eventually wrestle with God and come to terms with God. God will work with him. Our modern sense of justice and fair play probably wants Jacob to be punished and cast away because of his behavior. But God's actions show that God didn't abandon Jacob. And so nor will God abandon us or punish us because of our difficult pasts. Even despite family troubles, even despite drug or alcohol abuse, even despite questionable business practices, even despite the residential school. And despite other things we might have done or left undone in thought, word, and deed. Words that we're going to say in a few moments. We can all become a part of the kingdom of God. We can become the people of God if we move towards reconciliation with our pasts, reconciliation with ourselves, taking steps towards God. God will work with us, regardless of our past. This story of Jacob shows God's unexpected activity around us. Jesus' parables show God's unexpected activity around us. I suspect that many of us might have our own parable that tells about God's surprising kingdom. Once again, God is a surprise right before our eyes, baffling to the wise each day.